Today on XYZD PD Quark, the good, the bad, and the ficus.
Welcome to XYZPD Quark, the podcast where we examine every episode of Quark, the original series, alphabetically from all the Emperor's quasi-norms to Vanessa 382436. I'm Joe Dater.
I'm Pete the Wholesaler, Pete Mubbert. And I think everybody has learned those numbers their whole life.
I know, Vanessa, we almost don't even have to say them anymore.
2436, I know.
I'm Tom Taylor, still trying to cope with this transporter malfunction that brought me here.
And I'm John Scrizzy. Not that into sports, but I'll try.
And today we're talking about the season one episode, The Good, the Bad, and the Ficus.
Yes.
Now, right off the bat, is it just me? Is this episode's, the theme song sounds like it's got a different theremin in it?
Because
I've been watching this show for years, and normally the theme song comes on and you're hearing a Spacerizer T12, but this one sounds to me,
I think you're right.
It sounds like a Zaftenberg Loungemaster 4000.
It does have a kind of season three kind of feel to it.
Yeah.
And we're not going to do this argument again, are we? I mean,
no,
I guess.
I mean, I just know the music is different, but I don't think it's indicative of what we've talked about as the lessening quality of the show over time, you know, but
it's like
listening to a Silver LeMay jumpsuit, you know. I think the Zaftenberg Loungemaster 4000 has a different sound quality to it, and I prefer the Spacerizer T12. It's a more personable, it's kind of a sensuous theremin sound.
Normally, I'm not much of an audiophile at all, but I actually do know what you mean, and I can taste the difference.
And I wonder if that's intentional. Like, I wonder if they're sort of playing on the idea that we've stepped through the looking glass here. We've gone through the black hole, and now we've come out on the other side. It's kind of like thinking that there's probably some weird alternate universe out there where, I don't know if you guys remember, like back in the 70s, they did a kind of a spoof of Quark. I think it was called Star Trek or Star Trek.
It's not funny,
that.
Pete.
Yeah, I remember that.
Just because I'm from the other dimension, the other whatever parallel universe, you keep bringing that up. Like, I'm some kind of loser.
So you keep
where
saying.
I come from, Star Trek, yes, it kind of fell on its face in its third season. It got canceled after three seasons. But then it's like the biggest, it's like second only to, I know you guys have your DC universe. It's Marvel is huge in mine, and so is Star Wars, and so is Star Trek. So, you know, just...
All right, Tom.
But I see,
that's
point
you
taken.
Tell
though,
yourself,
I guess.
Tom. That's fine. I mean,
whatever.
I vaguely remember Star Trek as a summer replacement that was very, very quickly, very, very quickly replaced. And I was mad because it postponed the Carpenter special that I was hoping to watch one. And I thought, what is this crap? I want to see.
Why does Kirk suddenly appear every time I want to watch the Carpenters?
They told me Charlie Callis was going to be on the Carpenters show, and that's I was ready to watch it. And then this space thing comes on, and it's clearly a bald-faced ripoff of Quark. And I'm like, why is this happening? So I'm sorry. I'm sorry for your dilemma, Tom. I really, you know, but I.
How do you think I feel?
I'm sorry, but reality is reality, and you have to face that.
Yeah.
Realities are realities. Let's put it that way.
Okay. Granted. Granted, there's one or two alternate realities.
Right.
But no more than that. I say three tops.
Yeah. I mean, we're Quarkies. You're going to say that you're Trekkie or something like that. Something silly.
We go, but there's Trekkie, there's Trekkers.
I liked Quarkies. Yeah. That's what, you know, they always used to use to bully me.
Quarker,
I remember when I was at school, we had the one kid who bought the, you know, they used to sell the Quark uniforms that you could buy, and you'd get them at the conventions or something, and it was fun. But there was one kid who'd wear his to school, and he just got mercilessly teased and everything. But I thought I thought it was cool. I didn't.
And that was the robot costume, right, from the show that he used to wear.
Yeah, well, you could get the robot costume. He only had like the normal UGSP uniform.
Which is cool.
It's pretty amazing though. Like I was at Comic-Con. Was it 2 years ago? And I mean, it's always hard to get into Hall H because it's always like the big stuff. It's like the Star Is My Destination movie. It's the DC Universe. It's Quark. But people were wearing those Quark costumes from back in the day. Those Quark pajamas, from back in the '70s, and those were the hit of the convention.
Yeah, I still have my pillowcases and everything. It's great.
Yeah, and I don't know how you guys are too young to remember this, but I went to the first Quark convention, which was in 78, and it was small. It was at the it was still able to fit in just a hotel ballroom at that time.
The Penta Hotel, right?
It was the Pennsylvania Hotel on 7th Avenue. Yeah, and that's where they had that originally. It was before it eventually moved onto the Garden and eventually the Javits Center. But the first Quark Con itself was relatively modest affair before it became the giant, massive thing it is now.
Mm-hmm. Once we found each other, everybody, it just ballooned up.
Yeah.
I remember going there in the 80s when I was a kid, and my dad bought us tickets for me and my brother, and we were so excited. And I just remember, like, after we got past the entrance, there was a huge sign that said Richard Benjamin canceled. Like, after we paid for the tickets.
Oh, my God.
Wow. And I just, like, I was so heartbroken, but also angry, because why charge first and then tell later?
Sure, sure.
Yeah.
Bait
and switch.
That was the height of Richard Benjamin mania. So I guess, I could see how he was.
Yeah,
very
and they wanted to replace, they wanted to have Ficus come in, but he was not around for some reason.
Yeah.
But it was fun, nonetheless, just to talk to the fans and everything.
Now, I know I don't mean to always, compare universes and stuff, but like when I've caught up since I got here, on DVD with all the, movies and everything and stuff. But when the first movie came out, it's hard for me to judge. Like when the first movie came out, were people into it, the first Quark movie, or were they kind of like, hooray, it's on the big screen.
People liked it. People said it was slow.
Yeah.
The uniforms, they weren't crazy about. But it's gained a lot of steam. But yeah, I was just a kid when it came out. So, a baby, really. So I don't remember.
I think it's rightfully now hailed as being very ahead of its time.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean,
it's amazing how similar our universes are. But
there's some amazing stuff, though. I'd say 5 or 6 minute shot of just them lovingly collecting garbage.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like from all angles. It was really almost revolutionary.
Yeah. I do wish I could have seen it for the first time as a kid, like on the big screen. That would have been, because I'm like just sitting at home watching it. I'm like, it's a little bit rough. Like I'm not in the headspace for this, they did the like slightly longer. Cause I did time it as like 13 minutes of just like the Bettys. Just like the Betty, the Bettys are just like, making lunch, reading a book, and I thought that was awesome. That was fantastic. I thought,
can I say
they're slightly revamped for the movie, but
can I say something about the Bettys? I know I bring this up every time, but I think Betty one, magnificent.
Mm-hmm.
Betty two.
Yeah.
Miscast.
No, see, I'm going to step in here again, Joe. I think that's wrong. I think,
are you talking about the show Bettys or the movie Bettys?
Oh,
I think on the show, I think the movie Bettys were a little bit better.
Now, see can I interrupt for 1 second? This is my constant frustration. Is I have the perfect Star Trek reference to connect to this, and you guys aren't going to care. You're not going to know what I'm talking about. Spock is talking to two identical female androids, and he says, "I love you, but I hate you." And it's like this logic thing that he does to like bring down the system, and it's awesome. But you guys don't care.
Is he the Ficus character, or is he the?
Yes, you would call him the Ficus character. He's a very dry, logical,
sort of a vegetarian,
machine-like.
Yeah.
Not vegetable. He is a vegetarian, but he is not made out of plant material. No.
Oh, weird.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. That's weird.
Yeah,
you say weird. I say awesome.
I always felt that the second Betty just comes off as her performance is just kind of it's lackluster.
Yeah,
I think she is like 5 minutes younger, so she probably has that chip on her shoulder, like she's trying to catch up to her big sister. Maybe
no,
I also feel more like it's understated. I wouldn't call it lackluster. I think a little more naturalistic than Betty one.
Yeah, but once they went and did the movies, they were able to get A-list actresses. They were able to get Diane Keaton and Jill Clayburgh to play the Betty.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
it shows. It makes a difference.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
I'm kind of fine with that recasting. I mean, I had nothing at all against the original Bettys. They were fantastic. And they're probably like my Bettys, but I still do love the movie versions.
I love 50% of them.
I know.
Okay, now here's what I do have a big issue with. Quark the Next Generation. Yes, of course, there's going to be a lot of like recasting and stuff. And I get that they kind of gender switched the Bettys, so now they're male. But why at the same time?
The birdies,
they also combine them with Jean, so that there's one Betty who's a guy and one Betty who's a woman. Like, I don't, that kind of defeats the entire purpose of the kind of progressive gender switch they did. That always bothered me.
Yeah, I think it was a step.
I got over it. But.
It was a step backward for transmutes, but yeah. a step forward yeah. for clones.
Yeah.
Right. So you have to weigh one against the other. And,
one step forward, one step sideways.
Yeah, yeah. And look, I don't want to get canceled, so I'm not going to get into it.
Fair enough.
This is between the transmutes and the clones. Let them work it out.
Yeah.
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 Do we want to discuss the episode at all?
We probably should.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, this is Quark gets sent on a mission to, pick up some garbage, and they encounter a black hole. And they talk a lot for a while about getting sucked into the black hole and how they don't want to do that and they don't want to explode. But they escape the black hole and unwittingly release their evil counterparts who go around blowing up ships, good guy ships. Until finally Richard Benjamin faces off against Richard Benjamin in what I want to call it a classic Kirk showdown that happened several times on Star Trek, the original series, and in a couple of the movies, but you guys don't care.
No, that's interesting because it's definitely the classic, beginning of this trope on Quark, in sci-fi in general, but, I can't think of any other show that did this. Maybe Red Dwarf or
showcase
Charles in Charge. Benjamin. I don't know.
Archie Bunker.
It's a real showcase for Richard Benjamin to show off his chops.
One annoying New York guy against another one who's a little bit more irritable.
It's the full spectrum.
Do you feel like in this episode, do you feel that Richard Benjamin has been directed to sort of tone down the macho? Because I feel like he's just under the surface, just waiting to sort of unleash his incredible sex appeal, his untapped reserves of masculine virility. But I think they've actually told him to sort of play it down a bit, But when you see him in something like Diary of a Mad Housewife or Love at First Bite, he commands the screen with this almost primal kind of masculinity. It's I wish the show had given him more opportunities to just let loose with that.
Right. Yeah. Well, they used to call him the 70s Vin Diesel back in the day.
And, he really was the he was to the 70s what Tom Sizemore was to the 90s.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's weird is that they called him that in the 70s when nobody knew who Vin Diesel was. That's why, like, it didn't until like the 2000s or something that didn't make any sense. People didn't know what they were saying, but it felt right.
Right. No, yeah, it
sounded like a good name at the time. What would you call a super macho guy? Vin Diesel.
That's probably why Vin Diesel Diesel is not his real name. He probably said, I want to be like Richard Benjamin. What do I know? Oh, there was that phrase back in the 70s.
He's a real Vin Diesel.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
Vin Diesel's real name is Stuart R. Lubinsky.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's better, actually.
Yeah,
I think that's even more tough because if your name is Stuart Lubinsky's R. Lubinsky, coming. You're going to have to defend your honor quite a bit. You're going to have to get into a lot of bar fights to show off that you're a tough guy.
Tough childhood for Lubinsky.
Yeah, like, if you met a guy, John Fiedler, that he must be the toughest guy on earth. Just look at it, so that's what I think.
You guys are going to slap me in the face. John Fiedler was on an episode of my Star Trek show in my universe. So there.
Oh, see now that now I wish I could see that.
But what's weird is he was not a tough guy at all. He's sort of like a kind of nebbishy kind of piglet sort of guy.
So playing against type, you'd say.
Playing against type from this universe, yes. Mm. I think he just turned out as a different guy in that universe. In my universe.
Yeah, no, over here, John Fiedler pretty much always plays drunks, inmates, it's kind of pugilistic badass guys, he's in a lot of prison movies. He's in a lot of westerns.
In fact, one of my favorites is Midnight Madness. And if you've seen that, he ends up killing every team on the oh my another God. This is another scavenger hunt themed movie, but he just rips it apart. He just completely decimates.
Oh my Lord.
Yeah. Well, if you read Lee Marvin's autobiography, him and John Fiedler used to get drunk together, and they would go absolutely nuts in LA. You know, back in like the 60s, they would raise so much hell.
They would beat up the Brown Derby. They would do crazy stuff.
Yeah.
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 But Fiedler. Why are we talking about Fiedler again? Oh, he's a tough guy. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, getting back to the episode.
Oh, yeah.
Well, thinking about what could have been, I had read, I was reading recently that there was an actress, she made a brief splash around this time. Her name was Farrah Fawcett. She was going to play one of the Bettys, but they couldn't find someone that looked enough like her to play the other.
Oh my God, that would have been. See, you guys don't know Farrah Fawcett was the one back in the '70s. She was the Vin Diesel of sexy ladies in the '70s.
Well, that might have been her problem here. She was just the one. She was not.
I guess. Oh yeah. Yeah.
If I had to cast that like a perfect double for Farrah Fawcett, I would have said a young Edie McClurg would be probably the best.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah.
That would have been on the money.
Because when I look at the two of them, let's just say, I don't know which one I'd choose.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Which one is the clone? It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Yep.
So can we talk about Conrad Janis for a moment?
Sure.
Please.
Because
please.
He shows up early in this episode, and he, as always, is a firebrand of white hot charisma. And I think he brought this same kind of bald headed passion to his iconic role of Fred McConnell on Mork and Mindy.
I mean, he does. Yeah.
Oh, you guys have Mork and Mindy.
We do. Okay. We do. Awesome. And he was a character that ran a really badass music store, I think. This is when I was a kid.
It had a sassy granny in it.
It did have a sassy granny.
A good 87% of sitcoms at that time had a sassy granny. but this was the best one, by all means. I always, of course, as you know, from the show, I'm a huge Conrad Janis fan.
Oh, sure.
And, you know, I was happy because this allowed him, when he did the role in Mork and Mindy, he finally broke free from the very, very long shadow of Conrad Bain. And sadly, Bain never recovered from his feeling wounded from that. And that's what led to the grisly murder-suicide that claimed both of their lives in 1989.
Yeah, that was terrible.
That's still about.
Not to mention the literal shadow, because Conrad Bain's a tall guy.
He's a very tall man.
That's true.
He's literally. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, obviously he wanted to emerge from that shadow. Anyone would. But, you know, Hollywood, right?
Yeah.
Did you guys have the album? Because Conrad Janis just went through such a renaissance. Did you have the album Janis and Janis, where he did duets with Janis Joplin?
I
had that one.
Wow.
I had that, and it was great. Absolutely.
Yeah. I had the Janis Squared, the second one.
Oh, okay.
The first one, it's hard to get, so I haven't been able to look at it.
Well, yeah. Well, if you have a copy of that on vinyl, I would love to get a tape. If you can make a tape of that for me, because I've been trying to find that for ages.
Yeah,
it was a great album. I thought their version of River Deep Mountain High was better than Ike and Tina Turner's, and I still do. Hmm. I'll stand by that.
Yeah, they're perfect match together. Those guys,
they are. Yeah,
yeah. Now. So
sorry, we got off topic.
Yeah, we did it.
That's
we
all
did
right.
A little bit.
That's what we do. We do that in my universe too.
Yeah. Now there's the standard sort of scene here in Perma One, and you see the big head there, and I think this is a pretty typical big head scene, don't you?
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, he never breaks out of that thing. He's always just the head on the screen. He doesn't really do that much. I mean, not this season anyway.
Yeah, but it's a good scene. It boils with tension, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And as it should.
Yeah.
Yeah.
His head actually looks like it's boiling with tension. It's about to explode in any minute.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I always felt bad for the actor who played the big head, because later on he had plastic surgery and it pretty much ended his career.
Yeah.
See, you don't want to...
The head reduction. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's like the heavy actor who gets takes off all the weight or something.
Right,
or, yeah,
right.
It just never goes right. Like, you're happy for them as a person, but then it damages the career.
Oh, mm-hmm. It's the Faustian bargain, right? Isn't it? You know, he didn't want to be typecast, and he should have listened. He should have listened to his fellow character actors. Vincent Price told him, Alan, you've got a head that is the size of a watermelon. Be happy for the work.
Exactly.
You're a gift to the screen. Don't exactly. mess with that.
Yeah. Don't mess with it, but he had to go and do it. And that effectively ended his career.
I know. I'm sure. And he was kicking himself when the Coneheads franchise really took off.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
That could have been beautiful.
In the early 90s.
Yeah.
They made 9 of those movies. Eventually. But
I still haven't caught up.
Yeah.
Part of the problem, though, is, you know, you had the Gorgons in this season. It's sort of like the head is... They had a very distinct appearance, mm-hmm. and then a couple seasons later, they come back and they look completely different.
Yeah,
and then you know when we get to Quark, the Next Generation, and Quark Space Nine, like they're just—it's almost like it's a different race of aliens,
right?
Yeah, they redesigned them because there was a bit of a bigger budget.
But I mean, exactly.
It's too bad the head couldn't do that. I just wish.
I appreciate that there's that fine line between what could we have the money now that the show's taken off and, you know, down the road, like the spinoffs and everything, we've got more money, we got more budget, we got bigger audience, we can do more with the makeup. There's that thinking. And then there's also, no, the head is the head. I like that they don't mess with the head, like the look of the head. They kind of embrace the slightly offness of it, which I appreciate.
Yeah.
The movie head and the show head, it's just funny because in the show it was more just like a head with a mustache, but then in the movies it's like they went all out with prosthetics and everything.
And
it was almost like I don't know if there's another show like that where it's just like so different between the two. But
I remember like as a kid they used to say it would take like
40,
it was like 4 hours in the makeup chair to do the prosthetic mustache. It was insane.
Almost a month.
And they never cut that down, like they never they didn't get better at it or anything over the years.
I think you can. Like, I think that level of artisanship.
Is, yeah.
I guess so. I don't want them to cheap out on it.
It took long to put on, but 5 seconds to take off. He just popped it with a pin.
Man.
Well, and that was it.
I read an interview with Rick Baker in Starlog where he had worked on the big head later on in one of the movies. And he said that they had to put layers and layers of prosthetics on the head to hide some of the like bulging veins and things that were happening during the film.
Oh, really?
To make the head more static.
Oh, wow.
You know, because the actor would just get very excited during the filming.
Yeah.
And you'd see the pulse sort of the pulsing veins coming out through.
Yeah, because Benjamin
actually tried to hide that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I think Mr. Benjamin had a clause that if it's going to be vein pops, it's him.
Yeah.
He's got the monopoly on that. You know?
Classic and, Benjamin.
Yeah. Yeah.
You want it to look interesting, but you don't want it to A, upstage your star, and B, you don't want it to be just disturbing, you know, and get the sensors involved.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now I think this is a pretty good a Gene episode. I think Tim Thomerson really gets to shine here.
I think so too. Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah. I think
Do you guys have Doll Man in this universe? He did a series of movies called Doll Man. I never saw any of them, but he was like a small action hero and he was tiny. And he played it.
Yes, we do have that in this universe.
Oh, okay. See, I never know. Sometimes I feel stupid. I just don't know.
Yeah, we have a lot of Tim Thomerson in this and probably every other universe. I don't think you can get... I don't think there's anywhere you can go in the cosmos, in any dimension that you can get.
Yeah.
Where
the
you
dude
can,
casts a wide
you
net.
Can, you can get any... And there's no universe you can go to where Tim Thomerson does not have an IMBD page as long as your leg.
Yeah.
So, that's just a constant. It's probably just something that that exists even outside of normal reality. I think if the apocalypse ever occurred and all of our known reality and all atoms just dissolved, there would still be the many, many roles of Tim Thomerson.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, that's what made him great. He was so memorable. I think, you know, in Benny and Barney Undercover, I can't think of a better Benny to Terry Kaiser's Barney.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't. I would like to point out that in this episode, Tim Thomerson here is about 32 years old.
Uh-huh.
And this was a couple of years before he appeared on an HBO Young Comedian special.
Mm.
I just always like to point that out. It's one of my favorite facts about Tim Thomerson.
He's that good. He's so good. He can be younger to be on a comedy special.
Play a young comedian when he's 35. Yeah.
Wow.
Right.
I know. When everyone had seen his 4 minutes about 83 times already. He would do Charles Bronson at McDonald's. And
well, remember, he did him. They, you know, they would do him twice. One is Gene and one is Gene as well. Even before the show, Quark.
Yeah. He had these, it was a good 8 minutes.
Yeah. So it was, some say it was cheating, but, you know, the same bits in a different voice.
Well, and this show broke a lot of new ground. Like, this was, that was a big thing when you were a kid and you would, on your name tag, you would have your pronouns. And it was, I think Gene really, you know, brought that into the open.
That's
true. I
think we
all appreciate that.
Yeah. It's a precursor to the LinkedIn, pronouns and everything. Mm-hmm. He's still, if you look at his LinkedIn page, he still says Gene on there.
Well, I was a big fan. I was a big fan of Gene as a kid. I had all the merchandise. I had the lunchbox, the board game. I wore the Gene jeans.
Sure. If you were cool, you did.
Yeah.
I just hated that you had to buy everything twice. That was a massive drag. It's like Christmas time. My parents have a budget, you know? Do I ask for all the Gene stuff or do I like, oh, give me one Gene thing and then a $6 million man thing?
Yeah, because
I have to get that once.
The non-gender specific stuff, like Gene's pen, you'd have to buy twice. It was like, this is Gene's
right.
pen.
And it got
this
out of control.
Gene's
pen.
But his album, Gene Squared, is another good one. So I have that on vinyl.
Well, that's the amazing thing about Tim Thomerson's performance, because in this episode, he's actually playing four characters.
That's true.
Yeah. That is true. That's remarkable.
Yeah. He makes it look easy. Yeah, but I don't know how these things go on here. I mean, I've seen this location a lot since I've got here and since I've been catching up on media and everything, TV and movies and stuff. But there's that cave that they go to that asteroid.
The famous Richard cave. Benjamins. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that I've been in my universe. I've been there. I've been to that location because it is a Star Trek location. There it was I think it was the same as the Batcave. Did you have the Batman TV show here? Was it like Aquaman or something?
No,
for you weirdos.
It was Batman. We have.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, okay. It was the Batman cave.
It was exactly like Batman, but with an L.
Okay.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
And Batman and Robin.
Awesome.
I remember when they used that in Bill and Ted, the second one, that famous location.
Oh, right. Yeah.
It's been in a lot of films. It's it's pretty well known.
I felt special being there.
Yeah. It was in the film The Hours with Meryl Streep and Nicole Kidman.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was one of the prime locations there. One of the
Was
that their big fight scene between the two of them?
It was the big fight where they're throwing, styrofoam rocks at each other.
But, they got to choose dagger or gun, and they each other.
Oh, speaking of the gun, the gamma gun that gamma Richard gun. Benjamin points at himself in this, so I wondered what became of that prop because. Oh. It's not in the Smithsonian along with the United Galaxy Sanitation Patrol cruiser model and all the costumes.
And Farchie Bunker's chair.
No, right.
Right.
Flarchy Blunker's
chair.
Chalair. We don't even have the word chalair.
I always have a list of things that I have to go look up after we record. So
we don't have chalair.
Which you guys are screwing me around with or which are actually real here.
Yeah.
So I'm writing down Flarchy Bunker.
So the gamma gun prop, I found out, it's in the private collection of author Joyce Carol Oates.
Oh, and I heard
and
that.
No one's sure why or how. She's not telling. She's very, very tight-lipped about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But apparently, it meant a lot. It meant enough for her to acquire it somehow.
I mean, Quark fans are legion. I mean, they're everywhere. You can't assume that somebody is not a huge Quark fan, no matter what walk of life they're
from. That's true. You just have to.
Yeah.
You just have to, or else you risk being ostracized by your community.
Yeah,
yeah. Getting back to the gamma gun,
happened to me.
Have you guys ever stopped it? Like, have you ever, when you watch this episode and reflect on it, sometimes do you ever wonder, like, if you came across your evil self?
Oh,
would you do yourself in?
I actually think about that constantly. Not necessarily if I would do myself in, but like, you know, would I get along with me, whether I was like an evil version of myself or not? I don't know.
Yeah, it's
That's
hard.
A good question.
There's a lot of
shows like this, and yes, Star Trek would bring that up a lot and make you think.
Yeah. I wouldn't be able to tell which one the was. Like, it would be me or the other guy.
Yeah.
Or
what are you looking at?
Mix of both. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And if I wouldn't offer up a gun or a knife. I'd try to make it a little more even if we were going to fight. Mm-hmm. But apparently he didn't have a problem with that.
I would do a trivia contest with myself.
Yeah.
To see who was better.
Yeah. Exactly the same.
I have a little trivia. I don't know if you know this, but this is right after he did this episode, Tim Thomerson appeared in the movie Take This Job and Shove It.
Oh, yeah.
And that kicked off the Johnny Paycheck cinematic universe, and which led to the sequel, Take This Job and Please Rehire Me, I'm Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was
a
good one.
Yeah.
Now, I noticed that I looked up the director of this episode. It's Hi Averbach.
Yeah.
And I looked him up.
He did a lot of season one.
Yeah, he did a lot of things. He directed MASH, Dukes of Hazzard. He directed a McLeod. But for our purposes, of course, he directed an episode of The Rockford Files.
Oh, sure.
Of
yet
course.
Again.
Yeah, I know. It keeps coming up, The Rockford
Files. We need a bell or some sort of sound effect every time we bring up The Rockford Files.
Is it The Rockford or is it The Brockford Biles? I never knew how to pronounce it.
Let those people in Tom's world have The Brockford Files.
Those people. You're disgusting.
You people. Let these people have The Brockford Files. So yes, of course, no wonder this episode is such a standout because they got one of the Rockford Files directors. I saw he also directed something called Columbo, and I didn't know what that was.
I'll see you
have
guys.
Have you heard of that? Have you
no.
heard of that?
Well, I'm not even going to tell you.
Very short-lived one episode.
I looked up this Columbo, and apparently it was a detective show in the 70s. And what a terrible detective. This guy doesn't know what he's doing. He walks around in a raincoat. He doesn't drive a Pontiac Firebird Esprit. He doesn't have an answering machine. Who the hell would want to watch this show?
I mean, the thing was, he pretended that he was smart and capable, and everyone believed him.
Yeah,
and then at the end 100%. Of the episode, he'd be like, I forgot. I don't know what's going on. And then it would just end. The mystery wouldn't get solved.
You know?
Okay, I got two things to say.
Jim Rockford doesn't do that. You'd never see
your guys, this universe has a lot going for it, and there's a lot of cool things, and I do like it a lot. But
did you have the Streets of San Anselmo?
We did not. Okay. No, we had a similar program
with Martin. Oh yeah, I know that show.
But I should say though, with
Martin Balsam and Bo Bridges.
Yeah. But I should say Mariette Hartley, who was on a lot of Rockford Files, and later she, you know, obviously she's in season four of Quark. She was on at least one episode of Our Columbo, if I remember correctly. That show was very successful and very popular in my.
What do you know? I guess world. There's no accounting for tastes.
And that was you. Is that also on your universe? Starred Peter Spoon.
Yep. Yes, it did.
Oh, good.
Let's just say it did.
I'm glad. He's one of my favorites.
We have Peter Spoon here, too. Peter Spoon is one of the finest actors around. Currently living, actually.
Good for him.
Excellent. Yeah, he's...
Congratulations, Mr. Spoon.
Yeah.
I don't mean to be lecherous or anything, but I'm kind of into the evil Bettys.
I know what you're talking about.
I know. I always go on about the Bettys, but I mean the evil Bettys are a little bit special. Mm-hmm. I kind of like them.
Yeah. Did you notice they switch roles for the Betty scenes?
I'm a big enough Betty fan that I could tell.
Yeah. Betty, yeah. You can tell Betty Two plays Betty One and Betty One plays Betty Two.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I thought it was a continuity error at first, and then I realized, oh, it's a kind of a method acting technique they were using.
Mm-hmm. So, and it's there for you impressed. To notice if you get it, and if you don't get it, it would just go right by you, and you wouldn't even care.
Well, yeah, but I remember the first time I thought they just flipped the negative, and they were just because it was like, you know, a budget show, but it's not. It's
we can talk about the production value on this episode because it's magnificent.
Mm-hmm.
The sets are amazing. It looks like they used every penny of the $300 budget.
Yeah.
I literally thought they built a real Gamma gun. Like that. Those
that thing did look real. And the stuff that came out of it did look like Gamma.
Yeah.
It was, really did.
It was spewing gamma all over the place. And, I've seen gamma just come spewing out, and that's exactly what it looks like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If it's
yeah.
loaded, you got to be yeah. careful.
When, but, and when you see it, you'll never forget it.
No.
Leave it to evil Richard Benjamin and just spew gamma all over the place recklessly.
One of my favorite things about the show in general is the opening song is just so high octane, in your face, 70s mm-hmm. like disco yeah. beat.
And dare brings, you to stay in your seat.
Dare you to say it brings you up to such an excited level. And then the episode maintains that level. It's so exciting. Yeah.
It does not stop. Yeah. It's relentless.
It just keeps like it's on 10. Yeah.
It's like it's pitched at an operatic level from start. Yeah,
24 minutes.
No
right?
lulls. No lulls yeah. whatsoever.
24 yeah. minutes with commercials of fury, of pure fury.
Yeah.
Yeah.
yeah. I used to get nosebleeds as a kid when I was watching this. I mean, my mom almost wouldn't let me watch it.
Quark was given.
Like, no, mom, come on.
Quark was given dating advice to Dink, and I fell out of my seat. It was insane.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
The energy that they do. It's constant.
And you try to explain it to people who weren't watching the show and they wouldn't get it. And you'd be like, I don't have the skills as a communicator to let this person know what the show is like. And if they never got to see it, they just wouldn't know. They wouldn't know.
It's a visceral feeling.
Yeah. No, I think Dink, I'm going to say it. Dink, I think better than Honk from Far Out Space Nuts. I know, but I couldn't find who played Dink. It was either Jerry.
I don't want to know.
It was either Jerry Marin, Felix Silla, or Patty Mahoney, mm-hmm. and I couldn't figure out which one it was.
Just I think it was. It might have been Patty
from the height alone. I can tell.
Yeah, no. I remember. I remember that bumper sticker everyone had. If you honk, if you like Dink, back in
the 70s. Dink. Well, I had Dink if you like Honk.
Which, yeah.
yeah, yeah,
and I
yeah.
depends on how your so, bread's buttered.
It was the '70s.
Yeah.
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I got beat up once for that bumper sticker. I still don't quite understand why, but it made sense. All right. Well, do we have anything else? Do you think we've put the good, the bad, and the ficus to bed? We've replanted it, and now it is getting all the moisture and nutrients that it needs.
I think so.
I think the only thing I would add is, Tom, you strike me as a bit of a ficus character. I sense that in your other universe, you are quite a bit like you are in this one.
Yeah, I don't think I've changed between universes. I don't know. I do wonder, like, the time that I've spent here, I wonder how it's affected me as a person. And I say this almost every episode, and I do not want to offend you guys when I say that I'm constantly trying to get back to my own universe. I just feel like I belong there. I miss Columbo. I miss Farrah Fawcett. But I mean, I love being here with you guys too. And it's been a real, you know, everybody should have a transporter malfunction as nice as this one. That's all.
And that's the only reason, right? The shows, you don't have family or friends that you want to get back to.
I mean, yeah, I did have family and friends, but I had Columbo and I had Farrah Fawcett. I had Battlestar Galactica. It was a whole thing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You got to admit too that Evil Jody's kind of fun.
Oh, yeah. Sure. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they're all evil. I mean, I have a Joe and he's evil. Yeah. I feel bad, Pete, because they in my universe, you and I do another show together and we had a joke about you and I would have laughed over the use of the word hatch in this episode because we had a thing. I won't even get into it. If I tell you, you'll think I'm gross.
Well, what was the show?
It's about it's a whole thing. You know the guy Han Solo from Star Wars? He was in another whole thing of movies about an archaeologist in the 30s and really? Called Indiana Jones, and we would do a show kind of like this about all those movies and stuff, and they were great.
Is that as boring as it sounds?
I mean, when I say it now, yeah, it is. It's like, horribly boring.
There's an archaeologist. Like, does he just walk around with a little brush and dig things?
He's
up?
Like, yeah, he's got brushes. He's in the library a lot. He's
reading
books. It's
so.
It's kind of like the Betty scene from the Betty sequence, I should say, from the first Quark movie. It's like, you know, if you're not into it, you're not into it. I'll just say that, you know.
So,
but if you are into it, it's fantastic.
He's named after a state.
Yeah, well, that's a whole thing, but yeah, that sure.
That just doesn't sound very exciting to me.
Mm.
Well, actually, I thought he was named after the dog, but that might be.
Yeah, I mean, see, that's the thing.
That's what I heard.
It's a whole dog mythology. After the state,
you're named after the dog. Of course, we got to end it on a impression.
Jebediah Springfield Jones.
I mean, for all we know, the state of Indiana is named after the dog.
That's probably true.
In some universe, yes.
Well, I just want to say that. I'm so excited to be doing this show with you guys. And we've been doing it for a while, and we have a long way to go before we get through all the episodes. But I can't get enough of this show. It's my favorite.
Yeah, me too.
It's my favorite science fiction sitcom that does not involve rainbow suspenders.
Yeah, same.
I think we can all say that.
Most of them do these days, so it's hard to find one that's pure. You know.
Yeah.
Exactly, and that's what makes this show so unique.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. God bless it. And God bless all of us.
God bless each and every one of us and our doppelgangers.
Well, everybody in this universe, we hope you've enjoyed the show. And please come back, I guess, next week. I say that every time. I know, I don't know if I'm going to be here or not. I just don't know.
No, next week is goodbye Columbus.
Yes, we will be back, next week to talk about the episode Goodbye Columbus.
Yes.
Okay. Yes, that's the one. I'll still try to get back to my universe. If I'm here, I'll say hello, Columbus.
Columbus. Who's Columbus?
I don't know.